the SWP podcast for the first ever live stream episode recording. I'm joined by two of my absolute nearest and dearest, Chris Hare and Alicia Roach, co-founders and joint CEOs of leading SWP SaaS platform, Equate. Welcome, gang.
Hello, hello, hello.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Great to have you here. Hey, fun fact, did you know that the original Equate episode of SWP podcast is our most downloaded ever?
Ah, that's pretty cool.
That's great.
Yay.
A couple of amazing and very popular SWP thought leaders. So let's start by exploring the role of dynamic scenario planning in SWP, because that's our topic for today. So how does it enable contemporary strategic workforce planning outcomes?
Oh, this is a good one. I actually got in a little trouble from Alicia earlier today because I said this is the sexiest part of SWP for me. This is what puts the S in SWP. I really feel dynamic scenario planning. I love it. I think it's so crucial. There's so much we can say in this area, and we'll say in this area. But I have to say, one of my greatest joys since we started this business has been working with people who sponsor a dynamic scenario conversation, not really knowing what to expect out of it, and in fact, being a little bit afraid of it, and going into those sessions and having those conversations and having senior executives from a range of functions get to the end of that meeting and go, this was amazing. This is the kind of conversation that we need to be having that we're not having. And what's cool about that is that they're having that conversation. And that usually the strategic workforce planning person out of HR has sponsored it. And that, and I think the thing that surprises us in SWP land and also in broader HR is that those senior executives are not having those kinds of conversations naturally. Yes, they're having strategy discussion and they're talking about, business plans and markets and products. But they're not debating each other around different potential scenarios in that same way, particularly in a quantitative way, which is what we're doing in strategic workforce planning. Now, that being said, Alicia and I have some debates in this space. You know, I have vested a lot in saying that DSP is dynamic scenario planning is crucial and is, you know, in some ways I've been dogmatic and said it's the only way that you're putting the S in SWP. But while Alicia and I agree on a lot, we do have some different lenses and perspectives. Alicia, you know, you see it differently.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do think the ability to lift your gaze out of the day-to-day and look to the future is what makes this strategic versus all those other types of workforce planning that get kind of conflated with SWP. But I think the dynamic scenario planning, whilst it's powerful and I think very impactful, it's not always something that our customers do. So we do have customers that may take a set scenario and go, well, we're just going to model this out for the next 3 to 5 years and that's what we're going to work towards. And they don't necessarily go through the what-if trajectories of multiple scenarios. And they still get through some great outcomes and business impact. And so I just think you can kind of not necessarily go into this and, you know, if you miss it, you're not failing, I guess, is my point. So we see customers who don't necessarily see that as the center of their process, but then we do see ones that where they do, it kind of does take it to another level.
So let's put the D in dynamic. So what is dynamic scenario planning? How does it differ from perhaps more traditional approaches?
Well, I think, you know, the ability to be in a model and quickly go, okay, this has happened. COVID's happened overnight. What does this mean for us? What does this mean for our customer numbers, our revenue numbers, our transformation agenda? You know, we're going digital. We need to accelerate that. Being able to quickly jump into a model and dynamically adjust that on the fly is what makes it dynamic. And, you know, we've seen versions. I worked in corporate organization where, I came into an organization and they had a SQL model that was used, but to change one variable took 2 weeks and cost six figures. So that's not dynamic. So we need to be able to, you know, to really move quickly. The world changes overnight for us, and to be able to dynamically move with that is what we're going for here. And I would say as well, this is different to just being agile, which is what many organizations say when they just mean react quickly. And the reactivity comes from not having that line in the sand to begin with. So they don't actually know where they were heading. So then when they are being dynamic and reacting quickly, they don't actually know what the baseline is and therefore what the delta is. What we do with SWPs have that baseline. Well, we thought we were heading here. This has now happened. What does that mean for us? And we've got that understanding of how that flows through to workforce segments, skills, all the things that are required, so that we're making holistic and coherent decisions rather than reactive, knee-jerk kind of short term.
That's right. And I think it manifests in a few ways. And I know, Nick, we're going to have a range of people with a range of experiences listening to this. I think when you think of workforce planning without that S, you know, it's often starting with the workforce we have today and thinking about some of the moves of what I would call that workforce today, supply, how that might lift or move over time. When we're starting to move towards strategic workforce planning, we're introducing this element of demand, what we might need and how that might shift over time, separate to what we happen to have today. What makes it dynamic is going low, medium, high cases against all of those across those different lenses that Alicia mentioned. But being able to show that visually and have leaders be able to see there's not a single possible future, there's multiple possible futures, and we need to have a debate. Because as we look across our organization and we're going through change, some of the change that we're choosing through transformation or digitization, change that we're not choosing through disruption, or Alicia mentioned COVID, you know, shocks, external things, competition. As we look at all those different things, senior executives have differing views of how those will manifest. And so this is bringing together this idea of workforce, but also of these interpretations of the business strategy, and saying, we actually think they may manifest differently. We need to have that conversation. And I think it does two things for a senior leader, for a CEO. It either helps call out where people are in seeing different risks and interpreting things differently, and gets a really clear understanding of how different folks are interpreting.
Which happens all the time.
Happens all the time. Or it enables the CEO to clarify and really convey to their leadership team, you're assuming these different things, but this is what I want you to work towards, and get that kind of common view. Ultimately, it's about alignment. It's so crucial.
Do you think that organizational strategies themselves run the risk of being too far reaching in terms of their outlook and too stagnant? You know, we're looking at responding based on what I'm hearing is macroeconomic factors that shift, right? So things change, forces change, supply demand oriented forces change. We need to respond and shift our plan or understand what we will do if any of them start to come to fruition. But that strategy is still fixed, and more often than not set in concrete until the end of the strategic lifespan. Can organizations do that in a more dynamic manner? Do we think that there's a world ahead of us where we start to see more agility in that landscape?
I think they have to. I think part of what we're talking about here, in fact, what all of us are facing into is we're driving strategic workforce planning is not just a new HR process or an adjusted way to think about headcount next year. We're actually shifting thinking. And it's moving into this space of upstream thinking. And it's exactly what you're covering there, Nick. We can't just kind of take our existing business and increment it up 10% per year and go, that's a strategy. We actually have to take ourselves out and go, what are all these different moving parts? And if we're sitting here in April making a 3-year plan, We need to revisit that in July because the world is moving way too fast. We can't just be in fast react mode. Alicia, you have such a great line in here. You know, we have to be proactive, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's that proactivity. And I think what this kind of goes to at the heart of it for me is that, yes, this is called strategic workforce planning, but actually it's strategic business planning that just happens to be denominated in the workforce. The workforce is that common denominator across all our business areas. And this is a way to look to the future for the business. And where we see this really playing out well, and certainly in the evolution of maturity for SWP, is that this does actually start to drive a better strategic process and then more dynamic strategic process. And that's such a win for the org and so powerful.
It feels like, I think when people first get into this space and first have these conversations with those senior leaders, it's a surprise to everybody because it feels like the tail wagging the dog. It's coming at it from this angle of people, and folks assume that's an HR thing. But exactly as Alicia said, people are the manifestation of the future of these organizations, how things are actually going to happen. Mm. And there's a real clarity around what we're investing our time and our skills in through the people conversation. Using that angle to drive this discussion about the future makes it a strategic business planning initiative.
I can't remember where we were on stage. Alicia, it might have been you, Adam, Gibson, and myself, but someone suggested maybe in the future we start calling it strategic work planning, which I guess it's got some interesting.
Oh man, I try to rebrand this discipline so many times.
I'm trying to build a brand in it now. We're trying to build a brand.
It's so misunderstood. There's so many kind of stabs at it. It's Anyway,
Let's leave it. We know what we mean.
We know it and love it.
Yeah. But Chris, the tail does wag the dog. So I see this in the training room. I see it in the little bit of advisory work I do. I hear it all the time. When we start to analyze our strategic objectives as part of SWP, there's a real challenging of what's been created, and it often causes executives to rethink, restate, clarify, review. So often the start of a strategic workforce plan is halted because of a sense check around, well, is this really where we're headed? And what did we mean when we wrote this beautiful high level, motherhood statement around what we were going to do?
Right.
So maybe the onus is on people on this call and listening to this podcast to help, drive dynamic strategic planning in the future.
I honestly can't tell you the number of times that we've been in rooms or our customers have been in rooms and they've had their C-suite just staring at each other with their mouths open going, is that what you thought our strategy meant? That's completely opposite to kind of what I was planning for. And, the disconnect and the interpretation through their functional biases just is pervasive, and bringing them back together through having that shared understanding and that alignment Chris mentioned, it's just so impactful.
I wonder if we'd have more clarity if we articulated them in plain English from the outset rather than used more complicated business terms ending in IZE. However, we digress a little bit. Alicia, tell me about the importance of data here. How does it play in into our dynamic scenario planning activity?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, data. I think, we're big believers in the necessity of having quantification around strategic workforce planning. Without that, you just have a bunch of people with opinions. But it can't be data just for data's sake. And I think, that's where we're at risk of at the moment. We've got such access to reams of data. There's so much out there. There's so much tech. There's so much cool things at our fingertips. Skill inference is one we're seeing mixed success rates with, because at the end of the day, you can get the data and it may be interesting, but how is it actionable? What are we actually solving with the data? I heard a great quote at one of the conferences recently, utility over novelty. We can get all the data and scrape our data till the cows come home, but we need it to give us that sustainable insight and actionable intelligence. So I think, you know, data for data's sake is not where we want to be. And I think we kind of get caught in the cool stuff and the shiny keys and what's over here and what data can we get? But I think, you know, we need to ground it back into what we're trying to solve for, so that the data is an enabler, it's a means rather than an end. And I think, you know, we just see people that are swimming in their data lakes, you know, but they're looking for a life raft because they can't kind of work out how to make sense of it, and they're just drowning in all of this data. So I think it's important, and I think technology is a great way to you know, bring the data together. But again, back to the business problem we're trying to solve, what are we enabling? You know, what's the so what, now what with this? And I think that's kind of the balance we have to strike. We can't go to no data and just have people with opinions, and we can't go to swimming in our data lake and screaming for a life raft. There's a balance in the middle, and I think that balance is found when we ground it into what we're solving.
Data, yeah, well said. Data needs that contexting.
Yeah.
And I think SWP in particular, but we also saw this, Alicia, in a lot of the work that we've done in the past around deep dive analytics, things where you're trying to do the, not just the so what, but the now what, as we often say, as everybody in the space often says, but what does that mean? I think you have to be doing something that drives decision-making and drives the context for why any of this data matters. And if you're driving towards decisions and influencing first, then the hunger for the data comes.
Yeah.
But the mistake that we've made so often, I think in particular in HR functions, is vacuuming up, hoovering up, let me see, which cultural context do I want to be here, sucking up a lot of data for data's sake, and then going, wow, we, you know, people were interested in the first meeting and no one came to the second meeting. And wondering why. And it's because we actually would have been better off being lighter, still quantitative, but lighter on data, but generating an insight, pushing a decision, and saying, you know, Nick, you and I joke about this all the time, all models are wrong, some are useful. Let's get to a useful model that drives some decision making. And when people disagree with it, that's awesome. We go, great, let's invest in better data. This one, this model was 70% right, and it gives us enough to go, we should probably go right, not left. Next time, let's make it 80% right, and we'll keep honing that down over time. But you got to start with the insights and the call to action first, and then work hard on the data.
Fascinating. Yeah, I love that line. I remember you pinched it when Alicia wasn't on stage with you. You looked over your shoulder to make sure that no one was, Alicia wasn't there.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, you did quote it.
Copyright.
That's all good. That's all good. I'm sure there's no copyright infringement between co-founders. Hey, what about the tech enablement within scenario planning? So we talked about data and the tech that you know, or the tech enablement for the analysis of data. But what does tech enablement look like to support dynamic scenario planning?
I think, and Alicia, you know, I'm interested in if you agree or if you have a slightly different angle on this. But I think tech enablement manifests in kind of two ways here for strategic workforce planning. There's the process enablement side of what SWP is, and there's insights. And I think it's important to kind of split those two. They're both important. The process, if I just drill into that, there's lots of moving parts in strategic workforce planning. As people get more and more mature, those moving parts increase. And tech just makes that a lot easier. Tech helps us be able to get a handle around these multiple different moving scenarios and draw people into the conversations at the right levels, have that debate of, are we going left or are we going right? Then manifest, how does that look down through the organization? How does that help surface up decisions that we need to make for the P part of SWP, the plan? So tech is really crucial in that. And I think, you know, Alicia, you've said before, Excel only gets you so far. Excel can get you a little bit on some of the demand forecasting, but it's very hard to pull people into decision making. And then it's almost impossible to drill down.
Everyone's got a spreadsheet.
To decisions.
Yeah, everyone's got a spreadsheet. And so I think it's a hard way to kind of get the credibility. You know, I think as well that scalability and sustainability and the data that we talked about, you know, bringing so many disparate data sets together. And I think technology, again, as I said with data, is a means to an end. It's not the end in itself, but it definitely can do a lot of the heavy lifting for us, which is awesome. So that's where we really need to look at where technology fits in to kind of what we're trying to achieve and how it can accelerate or alleviate some of the heavy lifting or pain that can exist. I think, you know, there's some, you know, the AI frenzy is not going anywhere. I think there's some cool stuff there. This is more than just dropping, you know, ChatGPT into our product and being able to query something. This is how are we actually using that intelligence and augmenting it in the right way. And I think that's something that everyone's really working through in different ways with the different kind of manifestations of AI into our organizations. And I think it's a really cool time to be involved in this space because I think there's a lot of opportunity. And I think, again, it's just that caution. We don't want to just go all to technology or no technology. There's a balance in the middle. And I sound like a broken record, but grounded back into what we're trying to solve for. And I think technology is never going to displace the human factor. We already see that with a lot of the data we're getting on, you know, the skills of the future and all of that. A lot of the ones that are really crucial are the ones that are hard for AI to kind of, or impossible for AI to kind of step in and cover. But I think where this is going is really exciting for everyone. And we're certainly excited by how we're kind of innovating and using AI and ML in our upcoming product releases.
Yeah, so. I think just, Alicia, just because I also want to get to the insights part of that tech enablement, which AI kind of spans across both process and tech. But with a lot of our customers, when they first get in, for instance, to the enterprise product, part of the thing is tech simplifies the process. But if folks are not accustomed in the strategic workforce planning space of being quantitative, sometimes it can be a bit intimidating. But I think quantitative is key, right?
Absolutely. I think, as I said, if you don't have a data sort of centric conversation at the end of the day, it's hard to kind of get that P part of our SWP to matter and indeed the W part. So we always, I think Chris touched on this at the beginning, you know, SWP, what is it? Well, the S part's the strategic, that's the scenario planning and the dynamic kind of looking to the future. The W is that workforce projections, the size, shape and skills that we need to be able to deliver on our key strategic and operating imperatives. And the P part's the plan. What, you know, how are we putting this into place? What are we doing about this? And how do we know that it's been successful, that it's had the impact? And it's very hard to measure the success of a plan without numbers. So we do use a lot of quantification to bring it all together and kind of make sure we are getting the impact and outcomes. Because I think, again, it's something we get asked all the time is, you know, how do you measure the success of this? What's the ROI of SWP? How will we know we're successful? What do I tell my stakeholders so they care about this thing, you know? And I think it can be hard to kind of do that just on a qualitative basis.
Yeah. And I think the quant engages a range of different stakeholders and using a number grounds the debate in a way that a conceptual discussion can't. I think, too, insights are really important, Nick. You know, you've heard us talk ad nauseum about pancakes and make pancakes on various stages. You need insights to help you understand things that are happening with skills and how they relate to roles. You need insights to help you see, you know, some of the external movements that need to be considered as you're making decisions in SWP.
And I think this is super important to sort of the next thing I wanted to talk about was really human and machine side by side. I think you've opened up the door there, Chris, you know, is it the insight that is really what drives a successful person and machine relationship? You know, the machine generating the information and the human for the moment, maybe the AI in the future, really drawing insights from that and pulling it together and using it to drive some of those business decisions that you discussed before.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a three-legged stool, right, Alicia?
Yeah, we always, you know, cite our three-legged stool for successful SWP, which is that it's, you've got to have a philosophy around this. Why are we doing this? What are we trying to achieve? People care about this because you can't just be in a vacuum. It is, you know, SWP is the intersection of finance, HR, and business strategy. So we can't just be in a vacuum. We need to be able to be knowing why we're doing this. Yeah, in the right mindset, have the belief, have the, you know, the thing, the understanding that why we're doing this. And then the other P is process. We do need to embed this in a process. SWP requires sort of a sequence of actions and activities to happen to kind of get the impact that we're looking for here.
Decision
and then the last
gates. Yeah, decision yeah. gates are driven by the different folks and making sure we're engaging stakeholders at the right level, not too deep, not detached.
Yeah, and then the third P is platform. We do, you know, having come from being an SWP practitioner in organizations, I've done it all. I've built Excel models. I've done fancy visualization dashboards. I've built our own, you know, internally, our own standalone SWP software nightmare, and, you know, done it all. But I think at the end of the day, you can only get so far with your Excel approaches, and it becomes, you know, not sustainable and not scalable. So those three things that need to go together, you know, the first two, the philosophy and the process, are very much about people, and how do we kind of bring people along the journey. And so we need the two P's and the third P, the platform. And I think that's where we see the greatest success. And I think, you know, SWP can seem daunting. You know, we've got to get everything perfect. And we touched on this earlier, you know, that we are advocates for progress over perfection. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, and I know, Nick, you and I have talked about this before, it's let's boil this down into what we're actually trying to achieve here. It's quite simple. You know, we see organizations that go, we've got this digital first strategy. We want to transition all our customers to digital channels to meet our revenue growth objectives. Then how does that translate into an HR strategy? Well, we've got to evolve our workforce's technical and digital capabilities. Then what does this mean for our workforce plan? We're looking for that clear and coherent set of actions that tell us, you know, we've got to upskill the CX team in ABC skills. We've got to hire this number of engineers by 2025. We've got to use some UX freelancers for 12 months to deal with the front end portion of the project. You know, all these actions kind of sit and fit together. That's strategic workforce planning. And so I just say, you know, in kind of navigating the three P's and the interplay of people and technology and stuff, is I still would say, even if you don't have the perfect data or any data, just start having conversations that kind of go along those lines, and you'll see you start to get this natural pull for data and for quantification. But you're actually start getting in there and inserting this powerful discipline into the strategic future of the organization.
That's triggering for me. You know, some of the work that we've done, there's a couple of large financial services organizations that we've worked with that have been driving through using technology to help in these processes. And it's, as Alicia was saying, they're facing digital change and channel shift and things like that, and different ways to serve customer in the US and the UK. They're thinking about these things differently. But the common thread there has been what that change means has created business cases and assumptions in their organizations much differently in different sections of those organizations. Mm. And so what they've tried to do is use technology to draw out the picture and say, well, if we're doing this by 2025, we're going to need more people at this beginning stage. And then you're assuming we're going to displace, let's say, 30% of one type of workforce in 2026. But the reality is people aren't going behind a curtain. There's still existing customer change and other shifts also happening. These transformation initiatives aren't happening, out on their own. And so they use technology to be able to bring and drill up and down through the organization and show different possible trajectories in a visual way to then draw people into a conversation that helps adjust what is the strategy we're actually chasing at. And then, as Alicia says, then be able to take the outcome of that dynamic scenario conversation and really be able to leverage it when they're then thinking about how many CX people to hire in, how many engineers to retrain, how to change the customer success kind of teams.
Yeah. So I know that when you go into a new organization under the guise of potentially implementing the tech platform, one of the things that you'll do is have a conversation around the level of maturity and the preparedness to be able to get the most out of it and get value from it. So what would you say are some of the fundamentals that organizations should be looking at if they're entertaining an SWP-related tech decision? What should they be getting in place first and foremost to be able to really exploit that platform when it's implemented?
They have to have a real clarity. And Alicia, I really think too, if you come in here on outside in versus inside out kind of stuff, but I'll just start with, they've got to have a clarity around demand. Demand is fundamental here. Whether you agree with me on dynamic scenarios or not, you need some view of what you need in the future, separate to what you happen to have today, to start this conversation. And I think with what we see with a lot of tech and a lot of tangential tech that brings insights and information, it doesn't help actually drive the SWP process because it's missing that demand component. I think that people will go through maturity trajectories, and there's other things you can sprinkle in, like skills, like some of the complexity that you might bring in some of these stages. But I think, Alicia, fundamentally, there is a strength in inside out here versus outside in that I think a lot of people miss at their
present. And I think, the reality is none of our organizations are operating in a bubble. So we do have outside forces that we need to consider. But if we focus too much on that, we kind of lose what our organization is about. So why do we exist? What's our competitive advantage? What are we trying to achieve strategically? And I think that's where a lot of orgs have kind of become a little bit data blind. There's great data out there, but we can't go, okay, well, we can, technology says we could automate, 80% of our pilots, just to use our favorite example. There's no robot pilots, flying commercial aircraft. So yes, the technology may be available, but every airline kind of goes, okay, well, what customer's going to get on a plane? What's the regulatory environment? What's the safety and blah, 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 gazillion things? What's our customer value proposition? Grounding it back into our org's context. It's the same with skills. We can go, what's happening in the market? I love this example, and I remember we talked about it in London. The same role, the exact same role at two different organizations, advertise vastly different skill requirements. So you can't cookie cutter your way, or skill inference, again, can tell us what skills we have, which is useful for that gap closing kind of when we get to that stage. But you can infer your workforce skills all you want, and it's not going to tell you what are the skills that are going to be make or break for your digital transformation agenda. To do that, you need to ground it back into what is our digital transformation agenda? How does that fit into our strategy? What are the workforce implications of that? And that gives you that line of sight into then what skills and that what matter to your organization, how that's going to manifest over a multi-year trajectory, because skills don't just materialize overnight. We can't just click our fingers and go, here they all are. So we need that forward-looking view. And then we can go, okay, we know what we need today. We know what we need over the next 3 or 5 years. What do we have? And then that's when we can start to really bring it together. But the what we have part, is just a part of the equation. But what we need today and how that's going to shape and shift in the future is that demand piece. And that's, I think, as Chris said, the critical part of kind of answering, you know, this. So again, I think with going into kind of what you need from an SWP tech perspective, make sure it is SWP tech, you know, that it's got your supply, demand, scenario, gap assessment, action planning, kind of tracking and monitoring, all the elements. And again, that philosophical alignment on how it's going to enable your business is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm interested to see what the next frenzy is. I it might be the cynic in me, but I just wonder whether skills is here to stay, or whether we revert, or whether something else comes up, you know, a different approach. I'd just be interested to see what, how prevalent it is for how long. I agree, it's important. I agree, we need to think about it. I don't think it's all we should be thinking about.
No, I
just wonder. Yeah, it'd be interesting, super interesting. Hey, I know that you're always kind of prone to lead with thought leadership and profession ambassadorship, but I really want to explore Equate a little bit more, just for the good people out there who might be interested in you know, the tech, and lots of people are interested in the cool tech. So let's start with the enterprise version, and then I'm going to ask you cheekily about what's coming down the funnel. But how does it help with that scenario planning? So if I'm a user, you know, how can I use the platform to build out some alternative scenarios?
Well, when we're talking about demand and dynamic scenarios, I just want to simplify. What we're talking about is the organization's purpose and how that purpose is going to shift and shape over time. The challenge with trying to do this in Excel and other kind of cobbled together things is you have to start at a micro layer of demand, and you're then stuck there. I think what tech does, and in particular our tech in enterprise, we were very focused on two things: quantifying and simplifying demand. Quantification is there, and as people get more and more mature, they can get more and more sophisticated with demand models. But what we're trying to do is look at demand at different layers, at a macro layer over these overarching scenarios that really help leadership think in a broad sense, what is our trajectory that we're shooting for? And then at a medium layer, what are the major thematics that with any one of these scenarios, I might want to tweak or adjust on a thematic level? Are we centralizing or decentralizing? Are we getting closer to customer or further away? Those kinds of broad brush things that we can use. And the technology puts that into the hands of the planner to be able to bring people into those discussions without them being down in the planner layer, that micro demand model. Now that stuff is there and we need that, but that's not where you want your decision makers to live.
It's a really important delineation, Chris, and it's been a bit of a light bulb moment for me. You know, I have done demand planning at a role level. And if you're going to do it using first principles, what other choice do you have? Like if you're an individual and you're using Excel or whatever model you've built, you have to look at, if not a single role, roles that perform very, very similar tasks, functionally similar tasks, and plan those out together, because demand implications on those roles are going to be very different from other roles within your organization. So you can't just look at one metric for demand when you don't have the luxury of taking an enterprise or a layered view. So what you're suggesting is that what you're helping clarify is that it doesn't have to be that way if you've got tech to support taking different views and different layers.
Mm. One of the things that was huge for us when we moved off of where we first started with our own kind of built up models, when we moved into our own tech, Alicia, it sounds like, you know, it's infrastructure in the background of our technology, but being able to slice and dice the organization vertically, horizontally, diagonally, bring different roles together or separate them, that was huge.
Mm.
Being able to look at the organ, different.
And I think that's even more important, you know, just to what we're talking about around this skills thing. Certainly, look, you know, I have mixed views on the skill frenzy. I think skills are a part of the puzzle. I don't think they're everything. And as you've heard me say, skills aren't free floating. You know, we can't just go hire me 400 resilience and I need 1,000 leadership. They're attached to a human and they're attached to a task on the demand side or an activity. So I definitely think they have a place, but I think we need to have a reality check on the skills thing, but that's a whole nother conversation. But I think that's where the tech again really helps, is that slicing and dicing, the rolling up, rolling down. You can't sit in a room with your C-suite and go through the 400 drivers of your workforce. You know, that's not going to happen. So you need a way to kind of bring it up and have some scenario conversations. You know, how far are we going to go on our digitization agenda? Do we want customers to never speak to a human? Do we want them to 100% of the time speak to a human? What's the middle look like? Sliding that dynamically, seeing that flow through and immediately seeing what that means for the workforce. Again, that's just what you need here. And yes, Excel, I guess, is dynamic. You can type numbers in and they instantly change. But again, that visualization, that comparative basis of understanding, of seeing side by side the visuals of different trajectories and the implications on the workforce of those, again, that's it's such a powerful way to engage with your stakeholders.
Yeah. Pivot table slices driving pivot charts probably doesn't quite cut it, does it?
I love Excel.
Try to take your CFO and CEO through 100 drivers against, you know, 500 different roles for a 20,000 person workforce and make a decision. It's not going to happen.
Exactly. I hear you, Alicia, and I think I think that the skills, it will sort itself out. I'd love to see an amnesty on what we mean when we say skills, whether it's capabilities or skills or traits or whatever.
Because
I've seen lots of slides around that definitely confuse those three. I think once we sort 100%. That out, we'll have a bit of clarity around what we mean. I'll get back to the point you raised before, Chris, around insight, and you know, really driven by capabilities like data analytics and or critical thinking, whereas you know, the skill might be, you know, the ability to use Microsoft Power BI or build a report in that or do it in Excel or whatever. But the underlying capabilities, like the critical thinking, says, well, can I pull data together and draw insight? Like, can I actually use that to make my decision? And that's where I think we fall down as organizations, is we don't understand what's sort of sitting below that skills 100%. Surface. You know, the so foundation of the house, if that makes sense.
And so why it matters. And why it matters. Like, you know, we've seen customers who have kind of done some assessment on their skills of their workforce, and they've got, you know, all their employees going, I've got these 10 skills and these other skills, and, you know, and they go, oh, we don't actually need, you know, basket weaving or whatever. How do we kind of make sense of this? How do we know what we need to care about here? Again, I think is really important.
They go, well, we need data literacy. Does everybody need it? Does everybody need it at the same level? There's some people that we need them to be a very high proficiency.
Yeah.
There's some that we just want them to have awareness, but they don't have the ability to kind of slice and dice that and then tailor actions, the P part, accordingly. So I think tech is a huge enabler around being able to focus where we ultimately want to get to, the business case for different actions we're going to take.
Absolutely. And I'm all for organizations rolling that up or doing a top-down and saying, well, at an enterprise level, here are our prioritized ones. So recruiters, look for those and let's figure out how we get those in. But you're right, not every role in every organization needs every capability. So we should be able to delineate between those that are priorities at an enterprise level versus the cascading levels down the org chart or across.
And then there's that whole other thing about soft skills, right? Like, I'm still trying to find that unicorn that's joyful, awestruck. You know, how do you know, all these things that are apparently the in-demand soft skills. It's, you know, everyone just be happy? Like, why isn't everyone just happy? You know?
Yeah. Now we're really digressing into the skills thing. I think we need another podcast, Nick.
We do. We'll do skills. We'll do skills. Absolutely. We'll break down skills, capabilities, competencies, traits, soft skills.
Yes, yes.
And we'll define them all.
Behaviors.
Hey, two more things before we let everyone go. First, I wanna understand what's in the product pipeline. So what can you share with us? What's soon to be released in terms of the Equate offering?
Well, we've always said, Alicia, our vision is to connect people to purpose. And that's the stuff we've been talking about around this demand and dynamic scenarios, and then how workforce sits and fits in that, because we really think organizations cannot deliver to their customers, nor can they be responsible employers if they can't look forward and decide what they're doing with workers. The other thing that we've always said as a rallying cry is we want to democratize SWP. And to be frank, Alicia and I could see over the years that a lot of organizations have not figured out how to really jump into this space. There's advocates inside these organizations that know they want to do this, but they haven't been able to get started. And so we really wanted to find a new way to democratize. And Alicia, as she does in her genius kind of way, thought of different ways to solve this problem. And I'm super excited because we're about to release the manifestation of a year's worth of work.
Not quite a year, but yeah, I think we talked about this late last year and announced that we're releasing a new product in SWP, which is really going to the heart of that, democratizing SWP. So increasing the accessibility, reducing the typical barriers to entry to getting started with SWP, SWP for all. So we're really looking for a way to make SWP fun and playful. So yes, Chris is holding up a wombat. I'm not sure if everyone knows what a wombat is, but that's it. Our new product is called Essentials. So it kind of has all the essentials you need to get going with an SWP. It's about starting the conversation. It gives you some really cool insights. It uses AI and tech to really bring together, you know, those elements that we talked about that are necessary for SWP. What's your supply and how that's tracking? What's your demand? How does that shape and shift with your transformation initiatives, with the goals that you're trying to achieve for revenue or customer? Bringing it together in an action plan that's optimized and kind of giving you that end-to-end experience. It's very fun. It's got a really cool UX. It's very much based on, you know, our usual kind of consumer apps. So it's, you know, swipe left for this action, swipe right for that action. Let's play wombat here. It's very sandboxy. It features wombats. It's really fun and it's really engaging. And we're just so excited for it to hit the market in a couple of weeks.
Oh, wow. Super excited.
Australians are going to be horrified, but just to help everybody who's not an Australian, wombats are like fuzzy little bears. So this fuzzy little bear is going to make SWP a lot more accessible, but the fun part is there. But what it's trying to do is drive a conversation about the future, which we need to be having, and then it's going to take you to how do I then future-proof the organization? Mm-hmm. And we think it's going to be a game changer for people who haven't gotten as deep into SWP as we would have liked. I think it's really going to open up the field and get people thinking about that future and their workforce.
And I think a bit of an educational piece in its way as well, because people often say to us, you know, what does it look like? What do I get? You know, and so this kind of answers that. And you know, as people kind of see, it's not that scary. It's actually quite intuitive and you know, makes sense. And so they get comfort with that and can kind of progress their maturity and evolve. But it starts the conversation and it starts people thinking differently. And that upstream thinking that Chris touched on right at the beginning of our chat tonight, you know, how do we look to the future? How do we lift out of our day-to-day, our reactivity? We've got rostering nailed. We don't need to look to the future. You know, how do we have a different conversation?
Fantastic. Hey, this has been such a good conversation. Now, listeners, members, people who are in our fantastic community can catch you all sorts of glamorous locations around the world this year at SWP conference. So you'll be in Austin in June. You will be in London in November.
So will I. I'll be there, for sure.
I wouldn't miss it for the world. And we will be also in Sydney in December as well. So some great chances, depending on where you are in the world, to connect, meet Chris and Alicia, say g'day, find out a little bit about not only their amazing thought leadership, but also their incredible product, Equate. And by then, the new version, the democratized version. So thank you both so much for your time. This has been a great experience. Love chatting with you. Can't wait to connect again.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, gang. Cheers. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.